All right, it's about 5:33, so I'm going to call this meeting to order. Could we please have a roll call?
Tom Moore. Here. Judy O'Connor. Here. Joe Omoasagie. Elaine Palencia. Here. Kyle Patterson.
Here.
Julian Rappaport. Here. Jane Sprandel. Here. Susan Fowler.
Here.
Margaret White. We have a quorum.
And looks like we have citizen input. Is there anybody here from the public that would like to make a comment? All right, seeing none, we have the approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve? We got Susan for the motion, Joe for the second. All those in favor? All those opposed? And it's approved. President's comments, I don't have anything prepared today. So we can move on to our first item is the presentation on parenting model planning process with Pat Egge. She, okay.
Hi.
Hello.
Hello. Really appreciate the opportunity to come to have more of a discussion and to answer any questions that I can so far. This is from the parenting model planning. We'll previously call it the PLL. So you have some context to the program that was involved with the state's attorney's office and several and the assessment center. So what we at Cunningham, we decided that we would be willing to step in and try to look at a model that would be meeting the needs of not only the community but in particular the population that was being served, and hopefully beyond that population is somewhat of what I want to bring in. And what I did was present a one page for you to look over. If hopefully you have that in your packet. I'm not sure which page it's on. Three is the actual report. And I'm going to use that as a little bit of an overview and then a way to frame some discussion. And if I'm going off track too much, please let me know and I'll try to bring that back to making some sense. And but when you're doing planning, it requires a lot of communication. And so I've already reached out to some of the folks that were very involved with the other model of the program before, including the group, Savannah group, that was over the training, several people in the community, and some of them you see here a little bit further down when it talks about stakeholder committee. But I would be, irresponsible to bring up what I think is really important from this board is system of care. And system of care has been kind of hallmark from this group, and especially during the Access Initiative project when, which is now, 10 years ago or more than that, really laid the groundwork in this community for some of the framework that I think is really, really important to some of the work that we do. Much of the work that we do is to integrate into the community and begin to work together more and use blended funding and all those pieces that are kind of the financial side. But in particular, I picked out from the Building Bridges Initiative six bullet points that seem to be very key, especially with children and families. And so I'm starting with that framework because it kind of holds true to some of the evidence base, some of the models and how you might move forward from family-driven to cultural and linguistic competency and some of the aspects that are really, really important here. So I'm not sure if I should pause to answer questions instead of just keep going. So I think I will try to pause a few times to see if there's any comments on, like, where are you coming from, why is that brought in, and that would be helpful. Yes.
I was going to say there's a lot of people on this board with PhDs, so they have no problem interrupting you. So
okay. All right. Fantastic. Yes, Susan.
I think I would like to say that the board, or as a representative on the board, my concern was not so much with having a program that would serve at-risk youth and their families. In fact, having been a parent of an at-risk youth, I could really see the value. But the concern was the ability of the program to attract the families and enroll the youth mm-hmm. in sufficient numbers to be cost effective. And part of the issue appeared also to be retaining staff correct. To work in the program. So, you know, I'm great that you're coming at it from the system of care perspective, and I think we all appreciate that. It's more the implementation issue and how to make it work.
Right, right.
That is my concern.
Ms. Aguiar, I do have several questions, and so I would think that it would be best if you do it, and then we'll ask questions.
Sure.
That's what I think.
Okay.
Because otherwise, you won't get through.
Sure.
The presentation.
I can do that. I can do that too. So a little bit more on the system of care, because I think that starts to then begin to get the foundation. And if you clearly look at the first bullet point, it's family-driven and youth-guided care. And I think, Susan, that to your point, engaging families, and from what I'm really limited in understanding the program. I'd had nothing to do with the program. We've talked to people who've run the program. I've talked to Regina Kreider about some families that have experienced the program, and so I've already done some legwork to get some information. And part of the planning is, when you get down to the stakeholders committee, is have a formal group that helps you give some framed and focused information that helps guide you forward. And so that's what the stakeholders committee is. But the family driven, and it's just interesting, I did not ask Regina to do this, or plant this in, but did anybody receive an email from the Alliance, from the Youth and Family Alliance today?
Yes.
It's very timely, and I'm going to try to find it. But Regina and Yolanda, I think, is doing the training, and it specifically talks about engaging families in the juvenile justice system. And from what I understand, and actually, Julie, you could pick in because you were part of this, I'd appreciate. But part of what I understand with the program is that it was at a time, and the state's attorney would describe it as, it's a diversionary program. And that seems, as a parent, I think that would be a very troubling time for me to recognize that someone's coming in to help. I'd be pretty guarded. You're dealing with the legal system, and so I think that framework in and of itself makes it a challenge to engage families and it to feel like support. So that's why I went to the system of care and why we formed that as a framework to keep guiding us, those guideposts to keep pulling us in to that concept. The other aspect in the community that I didn't go into a lot of detail about is restorative justice, whatever you call that, but a broader sense of how restorative justice fits in. And it is very system of care focused and looks at different ways beyond using the court and the judicial system the way it currently is being used in our county and most counties across the state and nation. So the scope, and I didn't put a whole lot here, but what I hope we begin in the stakeholders group as well as when I come back to the board, and this would be an opportunity to bring some information back to the group, is to get a more clear purpose, a scope, and scope meaning even the population that would be served in the program, and the network. I've spent quite a bit of time, and several of us already, and so the planning session was not about getting a lot of money. It's using some of our time and being more disciplined to use some of those funds toward this effort, and I certainly believe it will go beyond that with focus groups. I'm thinking that probably it's going to be hard to get too many people around the table. It's a real challenge anyway, especially starting in the summer. So the stakeholders committee is the first effort to get some feedback from this group, in addition to the program, but to get some feedback on who needs to be in the stakeholders group, the committee. And I'm requesting two reps from this board and possibly someone who had a positive experience with PLL or some of the and have some knowledge, and maybe someone who doesn't know much about it or so I'm not sure, not telling you who to bring forward, but it'd be very helpful to have someone that's pretty connected to the board or on the board to help us with that, including the two members from a staff that could be on that committee as well. And then the final part, I just want to say what those are. Right now, we've done some preliminary research on models that we may look at. It would be wonderful if we get to a point where when we go through this hexagon tool to determine through different points of time or in kind of domains that we'll be looking at, if we have some we just know we will not look at, then we have fewer to grapple with going through that hexagon process, which would make it a little quicker. And then certainly if there's others that we missed, we would take some input along the way, probably the first couple months, so we have time to pull that together. So that's really what I had to present more formally from one page so that you had some guidance on where we're going with it now.
So it would be helpful to me if I could get your understanding. I understand this might change based on what you're hearing. Who do you think the target population is? Because I can't figure it out.
That's a great question. I think the target population, and again, I'm going to look over here to my colleague over here, but I think it really was intended for a diversionary program, part of a diversionary program for the family, with a family lens, to bring that family and the youth forward with a supportive, kind of working through a problem-solving approach, probably having some groups that you work with families. That was what was the model. And as I said, that's pretty narrow. I think, you know, we fully intend, and we said in the proposal that we would like to broaden that beyond children and youth that are involved in the juvenile justice system already. That is there any way we can identify kind of the trajectory that might end up there, some more at-risk youth, and have maybe even different types of interventions along the way, possibly. So that would be the vision of expanding the scope to catch that earlier, and then certainly the Youth Assessment Center would be a place to that you would probably engage with youth and their families. And it would still be a family model when at all possible. So
I guess I'll just comment on this now. We don't have to carry it on. Well, I don't know how to think about it unless I have a more clear definition of the target population. That's at risk is way too broad
sure.
for me to
sure.
understand what it means. And one would do, in my opinion, different things depending on who the target population
mm-hmm.
is. So
right.
I might do different things with people who are currently at risk for getting sent to a juvenile detention center or being as opposed to someone who's at risk for a serious problem of more focal mental illness
mm-hmm.
or a problem in school, or, you know, that doesn't rise to the level of legal issues. So
right.
I just don't know how to think about it unless I understand the focus. Is that, I just want to lay that out on the table, and you can do whatever you want with it now or later. It
sure, sure. And I think the board did ask about, can this serve a population that is not in the juvenile justice system? So I think that's what that question came in the last piece, and that's part of where we felt like we needed to come to the board to say that is a part of the definition. We need to determine that because the board thought that was important to be able to look at that. And I'll just say from my perspective, since I'm the one that's not only here, but the one that spent the most time on it, I think restorative justice in the sense of when something happens to someone else and there's that conflict. We've done a lot in this community over the last 20 years. And to be able to use a peer mediation or a VORP kind of mediation where you have the victim and the person who has had some experience with that victim, that is a very powerful tool. And what we've done in our communities have these pieces and not figured out how do we pull it together, and that's where the system of care comes in play. And I think restorative justice helps us guide some of those dynamics, at least a start. Then I think we would go through some of the models and see if it needs to be parent or family focused. I think that's the other part that I know is something that we want to have in this particular model, and that's been very strong in the proposal. So that piece would be an overlay as well.
Tom?
Yes, thanks.
Ms. Agger, I think this is a continuation of Julian's problem, and I didn't see it so much as who the target population is, as much as what's the focus of this plan supposed to be,
okay.
and for which we'll eventually get to who's the target once you decide. But for me, this PLL has a history and a context, and I think it would be really helpful to get from both Lynn and Mark how this thing got started in the first place. As I remember, our former director was looking around in the community for some program that worked with young people and didn't find it. And this was the best thing that he could find at that time. Maybe we've exhausted that. And as you say, we don't want to just deal with the needs of the population. Maybe we want to expand it in some fashion. And now that this is 2019, we may need another focus. And I'm not sure, and maybe that's what the target probably is. I don't know what that focus is. I don't know if that's what's called a set of goals or missions or whatever. But it's not clear to me why we're doing this other than we thought the PLL was pretty expensive, and I guess what Susan said about all the other administrative problems. But is that as a mental health committee, what's the pressing need in our community right now? And I don't see that here. Mm-hmm. I see a lot of former SAMHSA grant stuff in there. Maybe we want to do that, maybe we don't. But I think a stop with Mark and Lynn about the history of this, and what do we think are the urgent needs of our community with youth at the moment.
I'll defer since I've talked once and then okay. Come back.
So a little information to you. I'm the newest person on the board, so I have the least experience with this in the past. And so as I'm sitting here and we're talking about who our core person is, I personally right now can think of a young man, someone who is not currently in the judicial system, someone who I think at this point the parent is ready to say, I need help, problems in school, some drug issues, some theft issues, but never enough for county to say, you're in our system now. It's always, don't bring weed to school, son. And so that's what I'm envisioning when I see something like this. This is for the ones, let's save them before they go to that next step, you know. But again, there's a lot of moving parts. You have to have a kid who's willing to do this. You have to have parents who are willing to allow mm-hmm. their kid to get these services. And so that's how I guess I envision that I would hope this is the direction we're going. And I'm not saying if you're already in the judicial system, we've given up hope on you, because that's not the case. But when I think of this young man, you know, I just, you know, gave him his promotion slip in his eighth grade class, and I pray to God he gets his diploma. I'm hoping he's not in the judicial system. I'm hoping he's not dead, whether it be from an overdose or a bullet. I mean, I'm just going to be honest. This is a boy who needs help, and I'm not sure if he's getting served. And so, you know, I also say I represent, you know, Northern Champaign County, you know. I think we hear about all the needs of Champaign-Urbana. You get up around Rantoul, Ludlow, Thomasboro, there's some needs there that I don't think people are always seeing. And so I guess that's when I, you know, I came from radio, so you talk about your core listener. Well, right now I'm thinking about my core participant. And I think it's someone who maybe just needs help now before they get in so deep and think there is no turning back. You know, because unfortunately we know once you're labeled in the judicial system, sometimes those labels are hard to get rid of, whether it be for a job or even your own self-being, and that causes some mental illness issues and stuff. So that's just my thought.
A couple of years ago, we did an assessment of gaps, a gap assessment, and I guess we should go back to that and look at the gap assessment for youth and families. So one of my first questions is, what happens to youth who are seen at the Youth Assessment Center? Are they all referred to a satisfactory service or set of services? And to what extent is the Youth Assessment Service or Center a feeder into whatever program Cunningham proposes and puts into place? Second issue is, I have not been on the board as long as Julian and Tom, and so I'm glad they've reminded us as to why the program selected PLL was selected. But I will say that 7 to 10 years ago, I was a parent who called the crisis intervention team through the police department multiple times, had multiple meetings at the high school, And no one, including the school counselor, ever said, hey, do you know that there's a program called Parenting with Love and Limits? So there was clearly a breakdown between school resources and school referrals and what was available in the community, because I think the program was there then. And I was quite excited when I first heard about the program when I became a board member, and then concerned as there were administrative issues. So I would say, I would hope that we'd look back at that gap analysis that was done a couple of years ago, and certainly Mark and Lynn are very aware of that. And I'm glad to see that you've got the schools involved, I would say more than Rantoul, certainly Rantoul because it's often underserved, but I would also say Urbana, Centennial, Central, or at least a rep from Urbana and from Champaign. And I'd say you have probably someone from, I would hope, the crisis intervention team through the local police departments.
I think I'm relatively new on the board, but I've been involved within the community in many ways, going back to VORP and several other organizations. One of the things I heard you say is a continuum of care. So it's not just going to be kids with one foot in a correctional system. It's going to be kids, like kids at some of the kids at Circle, kids in many different READY, kids in different systems. And I think one of the things that we don't do well, yes, I'm going to put this out there, probably one of the reasons why you weren't told about something like Parenting with Love and Limits is that you're Dr. Susan Fowler and you're a white woman. And those things don't happen. Let's say it was me. More than likely, it would have been offered to me. And I think those are things that we as a society or a community need to take into consideration, that different aspects of our community are not looked in the same way. And yes, Northern Champaign County, or even St. Joe and Mahomet, there are issues and there are needs in these communities, and how we reach out to them and to make sure that we are all served is part of what the difficulty is. The Youth Assessment Center, I think predominantly when we looked at the statistics, it's predominantly African-American males. We're not the only ones that cause problems in this community, and I'm of it. And those are things that we have to face, and we have to have that conversation about, and how do we do more prevention as opposed to intervention? Because sometimes by the time you get to intervention, it's a little bit late. So what are some of the ways in which we'll use some of these services to prevent rather than intervene?
I just heard on the news or read where Urbana Schools is partnering with the Youth Assessment Center, and that would be all students in the Urbana schools would integrate if needed in the Youth Assessment Center, correct?
I'm not sure.
I'm really happy to hear this, but I don't know a lot about it.
Go ahead.
Could you turn the microphone on?
There we go. It would be for those students that are between the ages of 10 and 17. So it would be those that were late elementary school through high school. They can be referred by staff in the school, and it would be preferably through social workers, building support staff, and administrators. Because they're the ones that would be working with the kids that were experiencing issues, and they would have a better understanding of what our services are and how we could best integrate with what the school has to offer, so that we're not duplicating services, but we're providing more of a well-rounded approach.
Okay.
it can't occur without parents' involvement. You have to have that. That is one of the core things with the Youth Assessment Center. Parents have to be involved. It's the rare exceptions where you have parents who don't want to be involved, but the child does, and we look to find ways in which we can work with the child, because if that child is willing, we don't want to turn them away, even though the parents may not be expressing any concern or any desire to participate.
Urbana to reach out to the Youth Assessment Center?
Actually, what happened is that roughly 2 years ago, right after I was hired, one of the goals that I had was to develop operations agreements with our partnering agencies so that we would have a clear understanding of what our relationships would be, what they could expect from us, what we could expect from them, and how we can best manage that.
And so when you're hearing about the information we're given, is that something that you would feed off of in the Urbana schools?
With what Pat had mentioned about their desire to bring PL, yes. I mean, we're on board with that. I mean, when we were utilizing PLL, and I know that people were looking for a criteria and how we would do it. Initially, people wanted to do everybody would go to PLL, but that's a disservice. There are some kids that aren't necessarily in need of the services, and you want to make sure that you're providing access to PLL at that time for those who are in need of it. And it's really an issue of helping those families establish better lines of communication on the issues that they're having. And in that, what we would do is when we would do our youth assessment screening inventory of the child, if we had kids that were at a moderate and high level and their protective factors were low, those were clear clients that would be in need of PLL services. And if we had referrals from the community or from schools or families for kids with maladaptive behavior that also fell in line with that, we would refer those as well. And even if it was something that the parents wanted to do and suggested, say, is there a program that offers ways for us to better communicate? Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not saying this to Pat. I'm saying this to us. It seems to me that we're going to drive Pat crazy unless we have an idea of what we're looking for, because she's going to be proposing something that may or may not match what we're looking for. Maybe we're completely open to what comes up. We needed this conversation. I'm listening to the conversation, and I'm reading what's here, and I'm saying there's nothing wrong. Everything that's being said is absolutely accurate, but I'm a little worried that we're expecting this program to somehow provide for all the needs of youth and families in our community. Well, we need to be more specific as to what service we're looking for. It's extremely different. I have a lot of experience working with kids who were about to be sent by the police into the judicial system. Exactly what you said, Jane, is correct. Once they're in it, it's very bad. The best thing you can do is stop that process prior to them getting in it. If that's your target group, that's your target group. It's quite different than many other possible target groups or other aims. So if we don't have a clear vision of what we're looking for, what part of the system we're trying to have an impact on, which type of kid, what we have to have some vision of that. Now, we could get that vision. Maybe Pat will come up with a proposal, and that will convince us that that's the one. But if we're all over the place, I think we're better off trying to focus on who we're trying to serve. That's the shortest version of what I'm saying is I don't see how somebody can propose to satisfy us if we don't know who we're trying to serve.
Do we know where the greatest need is right now? or where, you know, you talked about the gap of services. Do we know, you know, we have services once they are in the system, we have service, you know, where do we know about where we're missing?
It would be good to see the gap, sir, that you're talking about. I think that would be really helpful. So that would be a starting point. You can see Jonathan's on this list. And I think that's a real pivotal place where you're going to find and be able to intervene before getting into the system. I'm going to get more personal, and I truly believe what Julian said is so critical, is to stop it at a certain point, and we've got to find that point and be very linear about what we're doing in that. So not to say that there's just a narrow, but that's so important, because once they're in the system, that's it. And I personally see young people who are still in the system, they will never get out. Much of it has to do with trauma. And so I think we need to understand the lens, and that's why the trauma-informed is here, and that's why the system of care guides us, because these are not bad kids. They're not bad families. These are families that have gone through a lot. And so I think just helping us understand we can't do it all, and I appreciate that, because I did feel a sense of that at some level at the meeting. Are you going to help young people who aren't in the system yet? Yeah, hopefully we can find some other things, and I think that's the commitment to this program, is that top end, that really are really close to getting in. But I think we can put other layers in that help bring training to parents earlier on, therapeutic crisis intervention, or training that you can do that will be helpful earlier on. You can do that in the schools. We already talked to schools about doing those kind of things. So and some of what Rosecrans talked about in Community Elements, going to families, and Joe, you're right on target, one family in particular said that. By the time you come to me and I'm already distrusting of the system and you're saying now's the time to give me help, I'm not really in a good place for that to happen. And I think we need to hear what people are saying, and that's part of this process, is to get some information from folks. And I think that's a real important piece. The pieces I wrote, some of the problems with PLL, I know Mark and Lynn Crossley, staff burnout, really literally staff felt like they had to be on duty 24/7 for the families that they served. That is impossible to do. You can't keep people. You burn them out. Engagement with families. And Regina, I wish I could find that sheet, but she here it is right here. The title of the training next Monday is Parenting with Families Involved in the Juvenile Justice System. And that's by Regina through the Alliance. And, you know, the conversation has to happen. I think there's conversations that need to happen. Regina's on this group. I've talked to her pretty extensively. And then the referral base. We talked about that in the provider meeting when we talked in December. So I think we have pieces. It's just a matter of us having some diligence of pulling the right people together, coming forward and bringing it forward to this group. But I do appreciate getting it narrow enough and not expecting this to do everything. But we do recognize this is more of what you'd call a higher end, really getting to that point where you really want to stop, and it takes a pretty intense intervention. But it has to engage the family in a respectful manner, in a methodical way that is effective. So that was helpful. I do think it's important for the board to kind of grapple with some of those dynamics.
I'm glad we're having this conversation, and it may entail a continued conversation at another point. But I'd like to just bring your attention to the congressional briefing that I participated in that Lynn has included at the end of the packet. It was a briefing on highlighting the needs of transition-aged youth with intellectual and developmental disabilities and behavioral health conditions. And I was asked to be on the panel through Lynn as a parent. I was really impressed with a group that is operating in Indiana and comes out of Georgia called Benchmark. They help to move youth from crisis into community services versus into the jail. There was also a sheriff, Peter Kutahan, I'm not sure how to say his last name, Kutahan, from Middlesex County, Massachusetts, who had this fabulous program that was contained in the jail, but it was an intervention program for those who were arrested. I volunteer at the JDC. They don't have an intervention program per se, similar to what the sheriff had. So we do have some resources that Lynn and Mark and others, I think, are familiar with that have been given national prominence that also should be, I think, looked at in addition to what you've got as models being considered at this time. Thanks.
All right, anybody else have any questions or comments on this topic? Tom?
I have a comment, not a question. This issue that I think we're dealing with, so I'm not sure, but I think that we're dealing with is with youth and family is not new to this community. When I first came here, there was a director here named George Roth, and we worked with George Roth because he was looking for a program that would deal with youth. And so that's 30 years ago. And then I remember Julian did a program where we worked with pregnant teenage girls who could continue to go to school. And then Peter did the PLL, and then we got the youth assessment. So we've been grousing around here about what do we do with youth and families for decades. And so as many of those efforts that you can dig up and find might help you figure out where are we in this year, 2019, because it's not the same. But we're still asking the same question. What do we do with these youth and families? So if you can find that out, that'll move this along quite rapidly.
I mean, and I think just piggybacking on what Tom just talked about, we've done a lot of this through different modalities, but it's been scattered. If there's a way to coordinate all of it under one umbrella, because, I mean, when George was here, I mean, and Operation Snowball was around, and we did the victim offender reconciliation program, and the pregnant and parenting teens through the mental health center. These were all scattered, and there was never really an interconnected way to do this work. And I think having one agency, and Cunningham has been around 120 years, so having one agency kind of being able to hopefully be able to coordinate organizations that may be doing a lot of this work from prevention to intervention and postvention when the child returns to the community and the families involved in it may be maybe what we as a community would be looking for, where all these different factions that we've done piecemeal through. I mean, when Rosecrans was a mental health center and they had the parents and teen moms, Children's Home and Aid Society coordinated with Operation Snowball. And there were lots of different organizations going on, and nobody really coordinated these programs. And so it's part of a coordination that hopefully would happen when this occurs.
All right. I guess I just had a few questions about the stakeholders committee. Have you considered having community members, people who aren't social workers or administrators, particularly people from, I mean, obviously we don't know exactly what the target is, but I think we have a general idea, and people who are members of those groups, particularly youth, or people who, families who had gone through the PLL program.
Hoping Regina will help me with the families exactly, and possibly some of the youth. But any other community member kind of topic, or from if there are other suggestions, and I could take suggestions through maybe through Mark or Lynn if you have that as well. That would be helpful as you have a chance to think about it.
And I had a question about the schools. It mentions that you're looking to have two representatives from schools, and it says Rantoul and one other school. So not both Champaign and Urbana? I guess I was kind of confused by the way it was written out.
At least one other school probably. Yeah, I was thinking either Urbana or Champaign, or maybe both of them. The dynamic becomes once you have a large group, can you really get everybody together?
Yeah.
And so that's part of the rub that I'm trying to figure out is how do you do that? And
it
may be a couple of segmented groups to do some focus group kinds of things when you have certain topics. So I haven't completely looked at how to do that, but anymore, if you have more than three people, it's sometimes hard to get a meeting. So I was being very conscientious of trying to be able to do that. And maybe we have a meeting up in the Rantoul area during the provider meeting or something like that, that you have some of those groups where you can represent differently. So it might look a little different than just one meeting. But being able to come back to the board to give an update would be real important to see how that's coming together.
Cool. All right. And looks like that's it. Okay. Thanks for coming out. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate it.
We look forward to hearing from you. This is exciting.
Do you mind if I make an announcement?
Yeah.
That Cunningham was able to receive the state funding for the youth and homelessness programming, which I'll just say it a few times. We probably won't. Previous Roundhouse program. So that's the state funding. We're working on the federal funding right now, which is due July 1. So hoping to bring back those services to the community, which woefully needed. And so we're very excited about that. So we'll keep you in tune with that as well. Yeah.
That's part of the coordinating thing. Yeah. We had Roundhouse, and in order for kids to be able to get back home with Roundhouse,
right.
Their parents had to be involved in the counseling.
Right.
And we've lost a lot of these services
that
over
support,
the years.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
Appreciate your time. Okay, next on the agenda is agency information. Is anybody here from any funded agencies that would like to make a comment?
Hello, I'm Dale Morsey. I'm the CEO of Developmental Services Center, at least until the end of August, and that's why I'm up here. I think many of you know that I've decided to step down as CEO of DSC at the end of August, and the reason I'm telling you today is Daniel Matthews, who's been the chief financial officer with DSC for over 11 years, has been hired as the CEO-elect and is going to do an excellent job and moving on. And I'm not going completely away. I'm still going to do some legislative stuff for Developmental Services Center and some fundraising. On a part-time basis, but I just wanted to thank this board for all you do and the hundreds of hours you donate each year, and it doesn't go unnoticed, not just by funded agencies, but by the community and the taxpayers, and moving both the mental health, developmental disabilities, and substance abuse system along can't be done without people like you, and thank you very much.
All right, looks like that's it for agency information. Now we have old business. We have a presentation on the Disability Resource Expo. Barb Bresner.
Good evening. excuse me. Yeah, I am just here to kind of share a little bit about the 12th Annual Disability Resource Expo. It seems like it's been a while. It actually happened on March 30th, so it has actually been a couple of months. The expo was a great event. I think you have a written report, but I'm just going to highlight some things. We did have, we always try to count. It's impossible. But we did the little wristbands this time, and we found out, we're trashing that idea again. But anyway, we keep working on that. But rough guesstimate, 1,000 to 1,300 probably, that actually came out that day. It was an all-day, five-hour event. Excuse me. We had it over at the Vineyard, and once again, Vineyard was just an awesome venue for us. Folks over there are great to work with, bend over backwards to be accommodating to us. And so as a result, we do have a contract in place for our 13th annual expo, which is scheduled for March 28th, 2020. So real excited about that. We did have 107 exhibitors, which is the most we have ever had, and that is actually over twice what we started with in 2007. So that was really neat. We could have had more. We had at least a dozen inquiries that came after that, too late. and we were full. Couldn't really accommodate him. So I'm working with the vineyard. I'm hoping they're going to add on someday that we can enlarge. Anyway, 17 of those exhibitors were brand new. It just amazes me each year. The resources that come out of the woodwork that we didn't know about. And, you know, we think we know all these resources here, and certainly we get people that, you know, organizations that come back each year. But to find new ones and to kind of step it up a notch each time is really, really great. Excuse me. 20 of our exhibitors were for-profit, and that, of course, helps us to fund the expo, so we're happy about that. Jim Mayer and I will be traveling to Schaumburg on Saturday to the Abilities Expo, and that's a big event that we go to each year to recruit, to see what's new out there, and to try to bring them to us. And we've been really successful in that in the past with that. We've actually got one organization, he's probably on 5 years with us now, and he came from that expo, so it's really neat to see the new things each year. So we'll look forward to doing that this weekend. We were happy again to have a hospitality area for our exhibitors. They really appreciate being able to get a beverage and a, you know, snack and stuff during the day without having to pay for it, so that's really nice, and we have sponsors that actually make that happen. So let's see. Each year we do have, like I said, lots of new exhibitors that come in. I mean, pet therapy and things like that. The new place for children with autism. It's just kind of neat to see those new exhibitors. We do each year have a scavenger hunt, and the kids enjoyed that again. Let's see, what did we do? Okay. We did, we each year do both an exhibitor and a participant evaluation, and we had really good feedback from both of those. Of the 107 exhibitors, we had 90 evaluations back, so I think that's really, really good. So. Okay, the fundraising for this event is really important. We spent a lot of time on that, and we did bring in just short of $14,000 in cash donations this year, and then almost 12 in kind. So that really, you know, helps to make this event happen for sure. The new resource book is out, and I imagine, Lynn, you have some of those in your office, so folks want to get some resource books, want to get them out in the communities. So please take some. We did a lot of promoting with the expo this year, as we always do, and I think we did more TV this year. We had, I think we were on Channel 3 three times, so that was, you know, a lot of radio and stuff, but it helps to get the word out to the community, and we found that that's extremely helpful. Our entertainment this year, I want to point out, please take a minute before you leave tonight to check out the picture boards. You know, it really shows, you know, what was going on, and the kids one I love, because those kids were just having a ball. So it's nice with the vineyard. They've got their own playground there, and then we just kind of beefed it up with our stuff too. So that was good. Our Amtrikes friends were there with three Amtrikes that they gave away, and that was pretty cool. Our children's area this year was new, so it was much larger than in the past, and we were able to have a music therapist there, which was neat. The kids really enjoyed that. The volunteers, I want to thank Chandra and Becca for really jumping in there and getting lots of volunteers for us. Thank you to Jane and Susan for helping us out with the expo, with the planning and volunteering day of and so on. We did a debriefing with our group, our steering committee afterwards, and which is something we do each year because we want to, as we start planning for the next year, we want to see what went well and, you know, what kind of things we want to make change a bit. One of the big things that we found, heard from that debriefing, was that we need more exhibitors for the hearing impaired and with visual impairments. So we're working on that. We need more parking, believe it or not, at the Vineyard. We need more parking. And we were very fortunate that they loaned us a golf cart because it was raining all day, and so that was great. One of the things we want to do is look at a safety plan. The Vineyard has its own safety plan, and but we felt that there was a need for us to kind of put together a safety plan, and we have a police officer on the committee, and so I think he's going to help us with that. I just want to make sure that during that event, everybody has a great time, gets lots of resources, and are safe. So that's our goal. Questions?
I have really enjoyed going to the Disability Expo over the years and seeing it grow. So my compliments to you and the committee for the expo again this year. I had one question because I think maybe this was the first time either I had taken the time or I had the information just to look at the expenditures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a question, not a criticism. Do you have public service announcements that are free?
Yes.
Okay. I asked that because of the money that is spent on the radio and News Gazette. Hoping that you're getting as much bang for the buck as you can or free services as
we,
you can.
We really try to do that. Anything free, we go after. You know, all of the television stuff, that's all free. We do the public service announcements. We get those out at different intervals prior to the expo. We do spend quite a bit on radio, but what we get is most of the radio is matched. So we get, you know, quite a bit for the bang that way. And so, yeah, we definitely look for the free stuff. And, of course, Facebook is great. You know, the social media is a great way to do that, too. And we have somebody on our committee that takes care of that, starts it.
I want to thank you for this report. It's very clear and detailed, and it was actually, I enjoyed reading it. So
good.
Thank you for the clarity and the detail.
Tom.
Mr. President, I want to congratulate you. I remember when you started this expo, and it was just a shadow of what it is now. And so over the years, it has grown tremendously. And I don't know who's to be complimented, you or you and a bunch of volunteers, but you have done a great job in making this a annual event for the communities of Champaign-Urbana. And it's been well needed. So there's a lot of hard work, apparently, that goes into this. And I think you should not be, we should not forget to thank you for the work that you've done in pulling this off.
Thank you. And we have a really strong committee, and it's, you know, people that have been with us over the years, which is great. And just everybody digs in there and does their part.
If you just see it from this year, if this is the first time you've seen it, then you think, oh, that's an interesting. But you have to know how it's grown over the years.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Does anybody have any questions or comments? Lynn?
So there's after the one, I really like the summaries of the participation, the participant and exhibitor evaluations. Right after that is a report from me about sort of the expenditures and revenues that we process in the office. And when Margaret White and I were going through this board packet last week, she pointed something out to me that I missed. And Barb also just mentioned something else that I missed that's in the same category. and that's the in-kind contributions. The $12,000 of in-kind contributions that you mentioned don't include the substantial volunteer coordination, or the coordinated volunteers that Chandra and Becca are working with. But there's also this group of people who've been involved probably from the very beginning, who are leaders in the disability community, who have always done this as volunteers. And I've never asked you if we put a price on their time, what that would look like. But Margaret told me just to mention that, not to try to do it today, but just to mention that as a value that I have not taken into account. And maybe you and I could figure that out someday. But I know that $12,000 in kind does not include those people.
No, it does not.
I think, too, I had the pleasure, before I even met with you guys as a board, I met with them as far as my experience in marketing and things like that. And I think each year as an attendee, I've seen it get bigger and better, and I look forward to helping out next year again. I still have this marketing knowledge. I may not be marketing every day, but just little things, you know. And I told her, you know, I'm a salesperson. I'm like, when you talk to a radio station, tell them, by golly, match me dollar for dollar. You know, and I'll use, you know, we used Illini Radio Group. I think our investment, I don't know, $1,400. It's somewhere in here. I couldn't find it. You know, but then in turn, I was able to get us $5,600 in PSAs. So, again, you know, there was like a little bill here for like Meyer. Again, you know what? I'm not embarrassed to go and say, hey, will you do a donation request? So I think everybody and their expertise, like you said, are so valuable. And that's going to, you know, eliminate little things here. And I love that you're going up north to find some potential new vendors. I'm like you. Vineyard needs to get bigger because you're definitely right. We could have put more vendors in that building.
Yeah.
So very good job. And if you'll have me, I'll be more than happy to help on your committee next year.
You're on. You're on, definitely. Yes.
Mr. President, maybe when you come next year, you can bring some of the volunteers with you so we can see who they are. And we can also congratulate them and recognize them as well as you.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. I really appreciated this. I didn't have the opportunity to go this year. I was out of town, but I went last year, and it's really incredible. I left with a stack of resources to take to work, so it's really an important event. Thank you. All right. Next on the agenda is the Disability Resource Expo cost report. Starts at page 29 or 28 in your packet. Lynn, if you wanted to fill us in on that.
Well, I'm sorry that I hadn't thought about the substantial in-kind contributions as actually measurable revenue. But other than that, this was just sort of a nuts and bolts. It's information that Chris and I took directly from the accounting system. And this is because we started talking about it a little bit at last month's board meeting. So we thought we'd show you what is relatively easy to pull together from the accounting system. And also so that you know, any member of the public can look this up, and I included the links. For the link to the county's auditor's checklist is always publicly available. The link to our accounting system requires asking us to get, if you how to get into it. You all could get into it if you wanted to, and it's not quite up to date, unfortunately. But the auditor's accounting system, because that is the official accounting system of this county, and we are part of that. We purchased those services from them. It's up to date, it's accurate, and it is also public. So, and the other thing is, if you want to know, you can call too. We can help, you know, we can just find things. So this was very easy for Chris to pull together, and then the hard part was describing it and deciding how much information to give you. And so if this is too much, I apologize, but we thought we might as well start with just all of it.
All right. Any questions about that? Good to go. All right. Next on the agenda is liaison assignments. I think I'm just supposed to remind you guys that if you haven't already, submit your requests of what you'd like to be, which agency you'd like to be liaison to Margaret. Margaret or Stephanie. Next on the agenda, the schedule and allocation process timeline.
It's just for information. These are also drafts. It's really possible that the DD board is going to change the time of their meetings, but we can't officially do that until they meet. And then otherwise, the allocation process timeline is there always for information, but a condensed version of that is in the packet for your study session next week, which the packet is one sheet of paper on your desk with agenda on the front and then this abbreviated timeline on the back. So it's possible that in your discussion next week, you will instruct me to change some of the details in the timeline, but so far, we're just kind of leaving this for information, and it may be completely irrelevant to your discussion next week. So.
All right. Next is DDB information.
They will meet next Wednesday at 8 a.m. They have two more allocation decisions still to make. Some of their funding, one of their funding decisions was deferred, and they're not ready to take that on yet. We don't have enough information. Two others, which they had approved, the agency has requested reconsideration of some details. So that's probably the most substantial piece of business they have next week. Otherwise, they have they're just like you doing minutes and agenda and financial claims, and then looking at these two expo reports. So, and then in July they will have two new board members appointed. Yeah. So it's only Kyle knows for sure.
Can I ask who's rotating off?
Cheryl Hanley Maxwell and David Happ both chose not to apply for reappointment, to apply for appointment. It's been difficult for them to make meetings other than that very early one. So it's just not I hope that they continue to be involved anyway. And, you know, just sometimes it's nice to have people who've done this kind of still in your ear about how it could be better.
All right. Next, can I have a motion to approve the minutes from May 15th and May 22nd? Judy, second. Elaine? All right. Any corrections, comments? All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Executive Director's report?
So there's everything I could possibly think of is in there because I've been working on it for about 4 months, and it's really supposed to summarize some of the ongoing activities. There are a few one-off things in there that I thought were important. But what I tried to do was actually match them up with your strategic plan goals to see how that worked. It was just an experiment. It was very strange. But I can keep trying things like that if that's helpful. I forgot, Tom Moore asked me to introduce the other people who are with us today as observers, and I don't actually know who you all are. So would you mind introducing yourselves? I just can't imagine that I didn't include something.
Susan.
Well, it's a great report, and actually I liked your effort to tie it to the strategic plan. You know, it made for some jumping around, but it clearly shows how hard you're working and how expansive your work is.
So I really appreciated that. And then the special projects for future consideration. I love the idea of the shared infrastructure, which I know you've talked about before. And then I assume that as it's appropriate, we'll have some discussion about the other potential initiatives. You had mentioned Parkland College Foundation, mini grant process, and workforce retention as ideas. Have we had any discussion as of yet on those thoughts?
We have. Some of these are actually kind of active topics in the office.
Uh-huh.
So workforce retention has changed a little bit in the last few weeks. We are becoming more interested in identifying multilingual providers of services, not just interpreters, but, you know, actually like therapists who could work with people who don't have English or prefer not to use English. So that's sort of new in here, but it seems to be emerging as an important topic for us to take on. And this workforce retention idea of, related to student loan repayment has a model. I have a whole bunch of materials that another county developed when they needed to recruit psychiatrists. And they have three psychiatrists who are enrolled through this program. So the psychiatrists produce their evidence of having made a student loan payment, and they get reimbursed through this fund. So there is a structure for that, but it might be the least interesting of the ideas in here.
Could you speak to the mini grant process that you? I'm sorry.
Has the federal government completely dropped? They used to have a program like that. Is it completely gone?
I'm not sure, but I think like one thing that just happened is that this county had not been identified as a medically underserved area, but now it is, or at least for behavioral health providers. So now we are seen as a behavioral health provider shortage area. Is it public health? But at any rate, that I think that's a state level opportunity, but that it does change things a little bit. So we might not need to use local funds for this, but I'm not sure where that's at, new designation. So mini grants?
Yeah, did you want to kind of describe?
Yeah, that's an idea that one of the members of the DD board is very fond of this idea. And they don't, as we learned recently, they don't have a sufficient fund balance to do a whole lot of additional projects like that, but it might be worth pulling a little bit of money out of contributions and grants and doing something like this, which would be more just money directly to families and individuals who have a specific need. And I think the format is what we would be looking for, and the CCAMR has a mini grant process. We might just want to take a look at that. And then I don't know how long it would take to present recommendations or to have a review process for those, but we wouldn't want this to add a whole another 6-month process to your work. So we would want it to be kind of a mini grant, like a mini process along with a mini grant process. But to direct funds for specific things that would help people who have disabilities and mental health issues.
I'm just assuming that we'd have a more formal conversation before we initiate any of this.
Well, absolutely right. And then the other...
It's good to dream.
Yeah. There's something else about this particular report from me that's unusual, and I probably won't do it again, which is at the beginning I've tried to capture the staff activities and some of the things that we're paying consultants to do. And this was at Margaret White's request to really kind of show, like, we're doing some things that we hope are helpful to the agencies who are under contract to do programs for people. Like some of the program supports that we'll be talking about soon are the U of I Evaluation Capacity Project. Like it works directly with just a few agencies each year, but is available to all year round. So that's one thing. A whole lot of Chandra's work is directly supportive of agency programs. So that's why I was talking about other staff responsibilities in the first part of the, it was, okay.
All right. I feel like I shouldn't ask you if you have more to say because we could be here all night. but thank you for the information. It's a very thorough report. Next, we have staff reports. Those are in your packet. Does anybody have any specific questions related to those? All right. Board-to-board reports. Yeah, Glenn.
Or not? Yeah. I guess this goes here. I went to a couple of events. One was the, I always go to the Community Coalition meetings if I'm around, and what was, it has moved to the Hawthorne Suites. It's outgrown the library. But what was a little different was that they had a presentation by a group of young men who had been helped by something. and Tracy Parsons said that they were going to do a little bit more of that. And that's really what's been missing in those meetings is to hear from the people that are being served. And this was from the Goal Setters program for young men, three of whom, you know, had significant issues with school and a lot of other things. And three of them have graduated from high school and have scholarships to go to Parkland, and two want to be certified as plumbers and pipe fitters. One wants to get his real estate license, and the other young man just was younger. He's a junior at Central. Those fellas were at Centennial. But they were allowed to speak. Well, they were given questions. Lynn was there. They were given questions ahead of time so they could answer them. But they just did an excellent job of conveying their situation, and they just kept what they had learned, and then the audience was also able to ask them questions. So that was a feature that I hope continues there. And the other thing I did was I went to Kim Bryan's suicide intervention three-hour workshop that she did at the library. Well, that you had to sign up for. It was mostly for service providers. But, you know, we fund what Rattle the Stars does, and so I was interested to see what those presentations were like. And it was very crisp and clear and evidence-based, data-based, but not dull. And I was very glad that it was not just anecdote-based, which some of those kinds of workshops can kind of wander into anecdotal evidence sometimes. So I think she's got a very good, from my point of view, very good product that she has out there. That's very would be there as somebody who has, you know, seen suicide in a family. I, you know, there were new things that I learned and mistakes that everybody I know makes that she pointed out. So very useful.
I want to ask Elaine a question. Like the Community Coalition is moving. It's moving from the library. Can you estimate how many people are at those meetings?
What they said was we've got a bigger room but the same number of chairs. So I don't know, Lynn. What would you say? I mean,
yeah,
we're there too. You want to estimate? I was going to guess as many as 200 because people came in later too. But
and you can't find a place to park.
You have to park across the road and down the street. Yeah.
Well, I remember maybe 2 years ago there was like 75 people there, and it was packed.
All right, does anybody else have anything to announcements or reports? All right, next is the financial report. Action is requested. Should we just motion to approve that? We have a motion to approve the financial report. Tom, a second. Jane, any discussion, questions? All right, all those in favor say aye. Or do you have to roll call?
Well, it's money already spent.
Yeah. All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Board announcements, which we kind of already went through, but we may mention the one earlier featuring Susan, but there's another article in the back from the News Gazette highlighting the Unit 4 and City of Champaign are teaming up for a wraparound program. It's going to be the Youth and Family Empowerment Initiative. It's my understanding there's already a program that's been in place called Goal Getters, and this is essentially a kind of an expansion. Would that be accurate?
They're still, they got, I think at this meeting, this is the meeting that Judy and I went to, and they got approval from the City of Champaign to further develop the program. And then since then, they've been to Unit 4 and got approval to further develop the program. So both entities will be paying for it, but the details aren't quite done. So I know Goal Getters is part of it, but I think it's got other, it's got a family, maybe some high fidelity wraparound for families, and some families are identified as in crisis, so there will be a structure for identifying future families who might benefit. But it's a work in progress.
Susan?
I wondered what the role of the Youth Assessment Center would be in this, hoping that there's not duplication, but
no,
they're involved.
No, I think the idea is that the Youth Assessment Center could be the point of, you know, the first point of contact for some people. And that's, the idea is to build on that, not to duplicate that. But this is, the referral would be from the schools. Like, so it's kind of, we do need to watch it for that. And I think that's one of the things you and I focused on too during that meeting.
All right, no further business. I will adjourn the meeting. No. Now, sometimes the presiding officer will ask for a motion, but it's not necessary.